It's Border Crossings with Larry London from VOA 1.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I welcome you to a very special edition of Border Crossings. We are about to celebrate our 20th anniversary here on the air. So many years, so many requests, and so many guests have been on this program over the years. I'm going to bring you an hour-long special that features some of our favorite guests on Border Crossings. We'll hear from Taylor Swift, Aretha Franklin, and Motown legend Smokey Robinson. So get ready for a very special 20th anniversary celebration on Border Crossings. Coming up right here on VOA 1. Hi, this is Larry London at the Voice of America. We're backstage in Meriwether Post Pavilion, which is in Columbia. And sitting across from me is the hottest singer in not only country music, but, you know, last year's top-selling female artist on the Billboard charts from country music. We'd like to welcome Taylor Swift to the Voice of America. Welcome.
Hey.
It's great to have you on the show, and it's great to have you here in the Washington, D.C. area. Now, what have you learned in the short amount of time? I mean, has anything changed in your way of viewing either the business or viewing yourself from when you started to, let's say, today?
Well, everything in my life has changed, hopefully except the way that I view myself, because I feel like you know, the perception of me has changed dramatically, even from people that I went to high school with or like my closest friends. They all kind of look at me differently now, but I just look at myself as the same person. You know, you're kind of like, wow, I've been this person all my life, and then all of a sudden it's exciting. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to walk into public places like a mall or something like that and have it just go nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, like I used to dream about that when I was a little kid, but as far as like how I view myself, I never want that to change, because you can't believe in all the hype that people say about you. You're still just a person. So that's kind of always how I've looked at myself.
I read somewhere that your mom keeps you grounded, but your dad is really having a good time out here on the tour with you.
My mom is very logical and very practical, and she's always like, now don't get too far ahead of yourself, you know, and one step at a time. And my dad is just going nuts out here, like handing out guitar picks. Hey, I'm Taylor's dad. Hey, good to meet you. Hey, here's a guitar pick. I'm Scott Swift, you know, and it's just hilarious. He's out there selling T-shirts at the merch stand. It's like, oh, dad's out again.
And I'd heard you in another interview say that you were really not that popular when you were growing up in Pennsylvania, I believe, that it was difficult to make friends, and you were kind of feeling a little bit as an outcast. But I bet you those old people in school now probably calling up saying, hey, Taylor, remember me?
Oh, they don't have my number anymore. But it's, you know, it's like the people that make your life hard when you're younger, if they didn't make your life hard, then you wouldn't have wanted to leave where you were to go where you are now. I never would have wanted to leave Pennsylvania and move to Nashville had I been invited to all the parties. So in a way, you look back and you're like, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
That's right. A valuable lesson. A valuable lesson. Now, you are a role model, and you are a great inspiration for a lot of younger girls and even older girls who look up to you for keeping such a great, based, clean life. You don't smoke, you don't drink, you tend to avoid, you know, a lot of the negativity that's going on in Hollywood. How do you stay away from all of that? What kind of advice would you give somebody?
For me, it's just never really been hard. I don't know, I've never had to battle with like the temptation of wanting to do any of that. So I feel like it's almost kind of weird that it's such a unique thing that I'm not a train wreck. You know, it's like in all my interviews, it's like, so is it true that you are not drunk right now? I'm like, it's not that hard, guys. Like, you know, I'm 19. I'm not supposed to be doing that.
Right.
And if I wasn't in this position, I wouldn't be doing it anyway. So it's just sort of like I'm getting a lot of a credit for something that's really easy for me to do. So it's really wonderful to be called a role model, and I take it very seriously, and I definitely factor it into all my decisions, but it's not that hard to say no to something for me.
Well, you're talented, and you're absolutely gorgeous, and you've been in several films already.
You appeared
with the Jonas Brothers concert, and you're in Hannah Montana, the film. And I know she's one of your good friends, Miley Cyrus. Now, have you considered other film roles? Is that something on the table, or are there things going on that we don't know about for Taylor Swift?
As far as a film, I've always wanted to tell a great story ever since I was little. That's always been what I've wanted to do with my life. And the way that I've done that so far is with music. But if I read a script that was a great story that I wanted to tell through acting, then I would definitely pursue it. I'm not shooting a movie right now or anything. I'm really, really busy with the tour. But, you know, if I read a script that just really I fell in love with, I would love to pursue it.
Now, talking about the album Fearless, which is doing so well, nominated for zillions of awards, already won several awards. In fact, it was the album of the year at the Academy of Country Music Awards. And so you've just had, you know, a tremendous couple of years here with the album Fearless. Did you expect that it would do as well as it's done?
I don't think so. I don't think I ever could have expected that it would just absolutely be number one on the top 200 for like 11 weeks. I never thought that that would happen. You know, having written every song on the album and gotten to co-produce it, it's just really exciting to see something that you put everything that you have into do so well. You know, it took 2 years to make it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like it was really worth it to put that much time into it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the songs, or if not most of the songs, are written about relationships, your personal relationships with people, both boys and just your family people. Does it come back to haunt you that you're writing about broken hearts and past relationships that guys say, well, I'll date you, but don't write a song about me?
Well, I mean, As far as writing a song about relationships, that's all I've ever done. Mm-hmm. The only thing that inspires me to where I can write so many songs about it and never get tired of writing songs about it is love. And, you know, the beginnings of love, when it's all the butterflies and magic and stuff, and then the end of it, where you feel like you can't get out of bed in the morning. That's what I love writing songs about. And it's like, it's not like guys don't know what they're getting into. I've been very open and honest about it my entire career since I was 16 years old. It's like, I write songs about real people. If we date, you're going to end up being a character. You can choose whether you're going to be a good character or a bad character. Choose wise.
Next mistake, love's a game, wanna play. New money, suit and tie, I can read you like a magazine. Ain't it funny, rumors fly, and I know you heard about me. So hey, let's be friends, I'm dying to see how this one ends. Grab your passport and my hand, I can make the bad guys good for a weekend. So it's gonna be forever, or it's gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. Cause you know I love the players, and you love the game. Cause we're young and we're reckless, we'll take this way too far. It'll leave you breathless, or with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name. Yet to come, oh no. Screaming, crying, perfect storms. I can make all the tables turn. Rose garden filled with thorns. Keep you second guessing like, oh my God, who is she? I get drunk on jealousy, but you'll come back each time you leave. Cause darling, I'm a nightmare dressed like a daydream. So it's gonna be forever. Your name. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, say I didn't warn ya. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, say I didn't warn ya. So it's gonna be forever. Your name.
And I also read where you had some dating advice, or at least for guys that were interested in you, and this was to other girls about, you know, X number of, if they text, you know, you don't tend to respond to a certain number of texts, and don't call him back if he calls more than once, or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, no. I mean, it's just a self-preservation thing. Like, if you text a guy and he doesn't text you back, don't text him again. Mm. Like, I don't know. Like, a lot of girls do that, and they're like, maybe he didn't get my text. It's like, no, he got it. He just didn't text you back. So don't be desperate and ever text twice in a row. Like, I just never... I never like to call or text twice in a row. Just because, you know, you kind of learn along the way that that's not the way to go.
Who are your role models?
My role models are people like Garth Brooks and Faith Hill. Mm-hmm. I just love the fact that they're so nice to people and they're so good to their fans. You know, you grow up and you have your favorite singers, and then when you meet all of them, that list kind of shifts to the people who are great people first and great musicians second. Mm-hmm. I've always aspired to be a great person first.
Mm. Now, how did you end up in country music? Because you have, you know, you're so talented, and your music crosses over into many different formats. So how do you think you found that niche in country? Has it always been country for you?
I've always felt like country tells the most detailed story. And it just spoke to me since I was little. When I was growing up, it was Dixie Chicks and Faith Hill and Shania Twain. And that's what made me fall in love with country.
Mm, yeah, and, you know, the fans in country music are loyal. It's mm-hmm. a different kind of fan. Now, have you done a lot of international touring? Have you performed overseas a lot?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of international stuff, going to Australia, going to the UK, going over to Europe, going to Canada. It's been really cool to get to go all over the world and sing my songs on stage and have people in a country I haven't ever been to before singing the words back to me. It's really cool.
And especially, it must feel rewarding when they don't speak English in that country, like Japan or Germany or somewhere like that, and they're singing every word to your song.
It's just been really, really cool.
Great experience. Well, you've given so much to so many people. One listener wrote in and asked me to ask you about college plans. Now that you're 19, you went to the prom, had a great experience this past year, last couple of years. College for Taylor Swift?
For me, you know, my life has gone a lot differently than it has for my friends. You know, my best friend, she's in college right now at Kansas, and she's studying journalism, and that's the life that she's chosen. For me, it doesn't make any sense at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were to go to college, I would want to study music, and then, you know, after I would get out of college, I would hope to get a job in music, which I currently have. So to give up the job that you already have in music to go study to get a job in music, mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough to skip a step. And of course, later on in life, I would love to take classes. I want to be as educated as possible. But leaving this tour or leaving this life or leaving the process of making this next album to go study how to do it mm-hmm. just doesn't really make sense to me.
Oh, next album? What do you want? The next album?
Yes, there will be a next album.
Well, of course there will. Can you tell us anything about it at this point?
The next album, I already have like 9 or 10 songs recorded for. Mm-hmm. But I just want to keep going and make sure that it's something that I've really put a good year and a half to 2 years into. Because mm-hmm. I don't want to just hope that it's better than Fearless. I want to make absolutely sure that it's better than Fearless. Because I never want to go back and just kind of be less of, I don't know, I just never want what I do next to not be as great as what I did before. So I'm going to put time and effort into it and make sure that it's something I'm even more proud of.
Taylor Swift, thank you so much for being our guest on The Voice of America. The
thank
troops
you.
And our international audience are in love with you and your music, and
aww.
We look forward to the next album.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is Larry London for the Voice of America, and it's not often that you have an icon sitting across from you. A legend, icon, a woman who has inspired millions all around the world. We'd like to welcome to the Voice of America in Washington, the Queen, Aretha Franklin.
Thank you so much.
It's wonderful to have you in our studios here in D.C., and faith has always been a very large part of your life. Mm-hmm. You grew up, your father, was a reverend and mm-hmm. in his own church. And, of course, you sang gospel music when you first started.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I traveled with him for many years.
And you released a gospel album a few years back as well.
On the Chess label. That's mm-hmm. right. When I was 14.
Wow.
A few years ago. Just a few years ago.
Weren't making music, what do you think you'd be doing?
If I weren't making music, what would I be doing? Well, I had thought of being a Florence Nightingale. My mother was a nurse, and so I considered that. And executive secretary, I considered that. And a prima ballerina.
Ballet?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
Yes, I took some classes in New York over at the on Madison Avenue, the Academy of Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur Mitchell had some classes with myself, and he gave me some moves that I was having a little trouble with at the Academy, and I learned them just like that.
No, it's wonderful. I'm glad mm-hmm. that you did get into music. There's so many people who have been touched by your music over the years. Mm-hmm. I was looking, and you have 20 Grammys. Mm-hmm. It's unfathomable to have 20 Grammys
that
for one person.
That is wonderful. It is wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling.
I mean, yeah. Does any one stand out more than another in your mind? I mean, was there one in particular that...
No, they all just felt wonderful receiving each of them. Who is it? The Pink Panther. You know who I mean? The producer.
Of the song?
Of the Pink Panther.
Mancini?
Mancini mm-hmm. has 24.
Well, but you're the queen.
All right.
You're all that matters.
Okay.
Aretha Franklin's our guest here on The Voice of America. We were talking about her Christmas album, and I understand you play piano on the new Christmas album.
I do. I played on several cuts, and next year I'm going to invest more time in my piano. Everyone always tells me how much they enjoy my piano, so I'm going to invest more time in it. I went to New York this past summer in August. I stayed there all month. And I took some classical piano classes from a young lady who started her own school, who was a student of Juilliard, and that is the technique that I wanted, and so I've started. And you're going to hear a different piano from here on.
I'll tell you,
the same and different.
Well, one of the most wonderful moments that I have in my life was watching you in 1998 on the Grammys, as far as music goes, mm-hmm. to see you come on stage and at the last minute, I understand, fill in for Pavarotti, who was mm-hmm. very ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, and I'm not kidding when I say this, I have in my iPod Nessun Dorme that
really?
You sang. Yes.
Wonderful.
And I listen every morning while I'm exercising to you.
Really?
That inspires me.
Okay.
And that was, you inspired so many, and everybody gave you a standing ovation, and that was wonderful how you hit all the notes.
It was a wonderful night. What a night. With two standing ovations that night. What a night. I'll always remember that.
Well, you probably also have more standing ovations than anybody else in the industry, I'm sure, as well.
I wouldn't say that, but I've had a few.
And recently you were honored by NAACP with a mm-hmm. Vanguard honor.
Yes, that's true.
The honors just keep coming in for you.
Wonderful. Mr. Julian Bond, a longtime civil rights man, wonderful man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I was asked to, one of our listeners, when I mentioned that you were going to be on, they wanted to know, because they're also from, like we are, from Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and they said that there's a councilwoman there, Martha Reeves, who was in the music business, mm-hmm. and she's now behind some proposal for artists to be paid for their music to be played on the radio,
mm.
and that's a very big issue right now.
Artists do get paid for their music being played on the radio.
Okay.
You get mechanical rights.
Right, as composers and authors.
Yes.
But as performers,
okay.
a lot of the
now
artists...
Now that I was not aware of.
Mm.
Okay.
So I didn't know if you knew that bill.
As a performer. No, I wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm. I know that Martha Reeves is behind that mm-hmm. from Detroit, so I thought since we're both from Detroit mm-hmm. that I'd ask if you were involved in that.
I missed that one.
You missed that one.
Mm-hmm.
The album duets, with the Queen, mm-hmm. you worked with so many tremendously talented people from music today, a fabulous collection. How do you pick who you're going to perform perform with, who you're going to record with. Over the years, you've done George Michael and Elton John, mm-hmm. and the list goes on. Mm-hmm. How do you pick these artists to collaborate with?
Well, a lot of times Clive would bring things to me. Sometimes the artist themselves will call, or it's someone that I would like to record with. So it can happen either one of those ways.
Mm. Is there anybody that you haven't worked with yet that you would still like to?
I would love to do something with Smokey, and love to do something with Stevie. And I very much wanted to do something with Oscar Peterson, but unfortunately he passed. God bless. And I'd love to do something with Herbie Hancock.
Mm.
And I have a favorite gentleman on the sax. His name escapes me right now, but he is so good. He is so good. Herbie knows who he is.
Mm. Well, there's tremendously talented sax players. You know, mm-hmm. Gerald Albright is one.
Yeah, Gerald Albright is terrific.
Yeah,
he's
a lot
very
of people.
Good.
Now, of all the people you've worked with, do you have a favorite time or moment or song? It's hard to pick, probably.
It's, yeah.
So many babies.
There have been so many. It's hard. It would be hard to say.
Mm. Now, talking about babies, mm-hmm. you have a couple of children mm-hmm. Who are music-oriented, musically mm-hmm. oriented. Teddy, I went to school with.
Right.
Who performs in your band.
Talking about that. Right. Oak Park High.
Right, right, right.
Okay. And my other son, Kelf, is a producer on an album that's forthcoming, Aretha, A Woman Falling Out of Love. And Kelf did something on that album. Eddie is singing, and he travels with me, my other son, Eddie. He's a writer, and they are up until midnight and in the wee hours of the morning making tracks, and he and his musical partner. So yeah, everybody's in the game.
And I understand, you know, it's interesting to me to find out, you know, I was told that you don't like airplanes. I don't like airplanes either.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you're such a celebrity all around the world. How do you get to perform in international
Well,
countries?
Now I have a custom bus, and I just go any and everywhere I want to, with the exception of over to Europe mm-hmm. on my custom bus. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's not one of those amphibious buses. But, yeah, we're working on it. No, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to take my first flight in many years. In a couple of weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. I've got a great support group.
Uh-huh.
And after that, if I don't want to fly anymore, I won't.
Right.
I flew for 23 years.
Uh-huh. Oh, so, I mean, as far as international touring, you must do limited dates then.
Yes.
And how do you get to those places? Because I get a lot of email for your music. I get from Japan,
uh-huh.
from Asia.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're on in Africa.
Okay. Well, I haven't been to Europe since 83.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not gone out of the States since 83. That's one of the reasons I want to do this flight in a couple of weeks, because I do want to go back to Europe very, very much. Love to go back to Paris. I would love to go back to London and to many of the places that I did go when I was flying. And then to some of the places that I didn't get a chance to go, like Frankfurt, Germany, and Denmark, I didn't get a chance to go to. Israel, Abu Dhabi, you know, places like that.
How about the Middle East, you know, places where the troops are? I mean, I get a lot mm-hmm. of email.
I would love to perform and sing for the troops. I hope that I'll be asked to.
Oh, they're going to be asked now.
Okay.
They've just heard about it.
I would love to. I would love to.
Now, you know, as far as the audiences around the world, when you have performed, you know, in different places around mm-hmm. the world, what's the feeling for you like when you're on stage in a country, perhaps like Japan? You've probably been to Japan a number of times.
I have not been to Japan.
Nope.
No, never have. The flight is, it's a long way to Japan.
Hours.
It's kind of like Rio was, about 15 hours as well.
Mm.
I was on my way to Rio at one point, and I was just really dreading the flight because it's so long. I didn't want to be in the air that long. And the promoter called and said he was going to reschedule, and I said, thank God. You know, I'd love to go to Rio, but it's just so far.
Hmm. Now, when you are in a country performing where they don't speak English as a first language, and yet they know all the words to Aretha Franklin's music, how does mm-hmm. that make you feel?
Wonderful. Many times they don't know the words in English or in their language, but they're enjoying it. And you can just, you can see it in their expressions, in their movement. They're still enjoying it. So it just transcends the lyric and it transcends the music.
Does it feel like it's been four decades for you? Do you ever wake up, sit and think, my God, it was just yesterday?
No. Has it been 4 decades?
I can't believe it. Looking at you, how beautiful you look. But it's been, you know, I mean, we're talking the 60s, respect and the first 2 Grammys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's been that long.
Just overnight.
No. Well, I was just a tyke when I started.
Mm-hmm. So if you knew then what you know now,
uh-huh,
would you have still gotten into music? It's kind of a two-part question.
Absolutely.
Would you still gotten into music?
Yes.
And would you do
anything differently?
No question
about it. No question about it.
Would you
music,
do anything differently?
Was meant for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you do anything differently?
I wouldn't be doing anything else except what I'm doing right now.
Because a lot of the artists, you know, that have gone through the different processes of the business know that it's such a business now, you know, that when you got into it initially, it was more about creativity and about artistic freedom and expressionism, but now it's become a business.
Well, it was for me, and it was a business for some other people when I got into it. Mm. It wasn't a business for me. It should have been, but I was quite naive and very naive at 17, and it was a business for some other people. And, of course, after people pay their taxes with your money a few times, you wake up and you learn the business.
No, you weren't kidding about
that. You know, after getting the business a few times.
Well, you know, I mean, you have obviously made a significant impact into music. Is there one moment that stands out in your mind above other moments as being kind of a defining point for Aretha Franklin? You said, you know, that you were satisfied, that you finally looked in the mirror and said, you know, I've arrived.
Well, to begin with, when you make the cover of the Jet, you've arrived for me coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at coming up. When you make the cover of the Jet, you have arrived. Mm. Yeah.
Well, you're I guess Billboard named you one of the top 20 most influential artists of all time.
Yes, yes.
Rolling Stone in 2004, you were in the top five.
Yes.
You know, most influential, powerful artists of all time.
And of course, later on, as a more mature adult, you realize the importance of Billboard and Playboy and these other various industry magazines that are really important.
What kind of advice would you give to somebody who's starting now?
Get the diploma. Get the paper behind you. Because getting in the music industry is not a picnic. It's not going to be a picnic. A few artists become stars overnight and don't become a star. Always maintain, maintain your natural beauty, whatever it is you have to offer as a person. Maintain that. Don't become a star and you'll be all right.
Yeah. As hard as you've had to work for the thing.
And surround yourself with the best professional names in the industry. Accountants, lawyers, managers, but get someone who will work with you because the expense aspect of the picture is so extreme and it's so high. After you finish paying taxes, if you don't have someone working with you, you're going to wind up with absolutely nothing, you know, by the time you get through paying out what you have to in your expenses alone.
You keep hearing stories about people who've hired managers that
ran off with the money and absconded with the money.
Made some bad choices.
Yes. Accountants,
you trust
too.
People.
Accountants, too.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful who you select. Select a respected name, someone with a reputation for having integrity and principles. Mm.
Respect. There's that word.
Yeah.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Yes.
Now, you were talking about, you know, advice to newcomers and whatnot. You've had to work very hard to achieve the success that you have. So how do you feel when you sit and you watch American Idol? I mean, you sit and watch that show. I mean, what are the thoughts that come to your mind? Is it something good?
I like American Idol.
Do
you? It's one of my favorite shows. I like it. And especially since they were singing a lot of my music. I particularly like it. Great show, though. Great show. I just, I thought it was kind of a little unfair, though, that some artists are made overnight on that show. Like, overnight, they're stars and they're catapulted into an industry which they really don't know anything about. And I think that it's to their advantage and it's to their disadvantage. I really do like the way that I came along little by little, and I wasn't thrust into something before I could learn what it was I was doing, learn and hone my craft, slowly learn this industry without being shot right out into the stratosphere. You're a star, you're a superstar, and people are calling and they're pulling on you this way and pulling on you that way. You know, some of them, I'm sure, don't know whether they're coming or going. So in a way, I thought it was a little unfair, and when you turn the coin over, I liked the way that I came along, and I took my time, and it was all very gradual and not overwhelming for me.
Mm. Now it seems like artists are a product, and there's not much longevity.
Yeah, yes.
In your day,
there is.
They cultivated the look and everything.
Yes, for some it will be, mm-hmm. and for others it won't be.
Hopefully you'll be a mentor on American Idol. That would be a wonderful
to
have you on.
I would love to. I would love to, but I just can't seem to get a call from American Idol. I've called them a few times and they haven't returned my call.
Simon, what's the matter with you?
I don't know. He's being a nasty guy.
You got to call the Queen of Soul. Now, I wanted to know, when's the first time that you heard anybody call you the Queen of Soul? And I mean, that name has been with you.
Out in Chicago when I first... started appearing at the Regal Theater, and during that time was when Barry was just launching Motown, and some of the other artists that performed with me during that time were the Contours, the Marvelettes, the Temptations, and we were only like 17, 18 years old, but we were all coming along together. And the gentleman that produced those shows, Purvis Spann. They used to call him Purvis Spann, the Blues Man. Radio station WVON out of Chicago is the person that brought the crown on stage one evening and just announced that. But he announced it after the Downbeat poll, the Playboy polls. I had won those polls. And Leonard Feather, who was a very noted critic at the time, announced that as well. So it was about the same time that he did that, and that's where that came from.
Now, I grew up in Detroit, and I remember on the radio it was Martha Jean, the Queen. I used to call her and say, there's only one
Steinberg.
Queen in Detroit. There's only one Queen in Detroit.
Right, Martha Jean Steinberg.
And
okay.
That's Aretha Franklin, who's our guest here today on The Voice of America, and I'm just in awe as I sit here and I talk to you and look at you. I mean, I've been listening to your music, you know, ever since I was a little kid, and you look beautiful.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't know what the secret is. I want to find out that secret.
Thank you very much.
You look great.
Well, I started very young.
Yeah, well, you're still young at heart, and I think that's the key.
And I am, and you're right.
Now, what is the best advice you ever got, and who gave it to you?
The best advice that
best
I
advice
ever got?
Best advice you ever got, because you've worked with
I've
them all.
I've got a lot of good advice, but... let me think about that one. I'll come back to it.
Okay. Another tough question for you.
All right.
When they make the Aretha Franklin story, who do you want to play Aretha Franklin?
I don't know. We've been trying to figure that out for a good little while now. Usually when you find the actress that you like, a Halle Berry, she's not a singer. Or if you find a Fantasia, she doesn't have the Oscar like Halle Berry does for acting. She doesn't have the same credentials. So usually when you find one, you can't find the other. That's what makes it so hard.
Mm.
So we're still looking, and we'll find just the right person.
Jennifer Hudson?
Maybe. We met for tea. We'll see.
I read somewhere that you have actually dined with the Queen of England. Is that true?
No, but I have a standing invitation to have tea at the Queen's tea party.
Fantastic.
Yes.
I'm sure you're welcomed by all royalty around the world.
I am.
If you just accept the invitations.
Well, I've been fortunate in getting royal invitations, so I can't wait to get back to London to go to the palace. I passed there nightly when I was flying. This was back in 82. And we did the Royal Variety Show, and Prince Charles and Lady Di were there. And I used to pass the palace on the way to the concert nightly. So I can't wait to get back to London. I did get an invitation to do the Queen's Silver Jubilee several years, but at that point I'd stopped flying, and I was so disappointed. I really was.
Well, I've got to ask you, because it's come up a couple of times, why did you stop flying? What made you change?
I just had a very bad flight, mm-hmm. and one of those little two-engine planes. I didn't know that you really shouldn't fly those planes. You stay on the jets. You ride the jets. Don't fly those planes. No one told me that. And I was in a hurry to get home from Atlanta in 83. And they said, well, this is all that's available. I said, well, we'll take that. You know, a plane is a plane. What's the difference? No one told me. Mm. And what a time we had coming home.
I imagine.
So at that point, I knew why the Pope kissed the ground. I said, okay, I understand what that's about now.
You're going to stay in the
ground. When I get to Metropolitan Airport, right. I'm going to kiss the ground there, and I'm not getting back on. And since then, I haven't. But at this point, I'm ready to get back on. I'm ready.
This is Larry London, and you're listening and watching The Voice of America. We are downtown in Washington, D.C. today, and sitting across from me, a music icon, a legend, a man who I've admired and millions around the world have admired for many, many years. We welcome to VOA Mr. Smokey Robinson.
Thank you very much.
It's an honor to have you on our show today. And, well, first of all, congratulations on the big honor that you have just received from the Kennedy Center here in Washington.
Well, thank you very much. It was one of the most wonderful nights of my life. We've had a wonderful weekend, and I'm very honored by that and very flattered.
And I believe even Aretha Franklin was there to pay honor to you. I mean, that...
Yeah, well, Aretha is my baby, man. You know, I've known Aretha since I was about 6 years old. We grew up right around the corner from each other, and she's a wonderful lady. We're very, very close.
Now, somebody like myself who's grown up in Detroit and familiar with Holland Dozier Holland, and I've interviewed Diana Ross and I've interviewed Mary Wilson, and I wanted to ask you, as the one of the fathers of Motown, the sound, if you could define the Motown sound in your words, what would you say?
Well, you know, I've heard many explanations and many opinions about the Motown sound and what it is. You know, more bass, more kick drum, more piano. You know, but the Motown sound, my opinion of it, or my take on it, is Motown sound is and was the people, the producers, the writers, the artists, the Funk Brothers. You know, or the Funk Brothers were our house band, and we are the Motown sound because when we first started to become popular, people were bringing their artists from Africa, from London, from Chicago, from New York, from Nashville, from Los Angeles, from everywhere to Detroit to record their artists because they felt like the Motown sound was somewhere in the air in Detroit. And if you brought your artists to Detroit to record them, you were going to get the Motown sound because it was just there. That's how we got it, because we happened to be in Detroit and so did the Motown sound. However, what they didn't realize is that at the same time, we recorded our artists when they were on the road. We recorded them in London and in Chicago and in New York and in Philadelphia and Memphis and Los Angeles and wherever they happened to be at the time if we wanted to record them. And we always got the Motown sound. I defy someone to sit me down and play me a bunch of Motown records and say, okay, this one was recorded in Chicago and this one was recorded in Detroit. Because we always got the Motown sound because the people, we're the Motown sound.
It's unbelievable that so many hits were recorded in that little teeny studio, Hitsville, USA, in Detroit on West Grand Boulevard. I've been there several times. You walk in there and you can just feel it. I know the vibe, and you guys were a very close family. You know, Martha Reeves, who was a receptionist and then became a singer, and it's just unbelievable all of the things that were created and born in Motown. And if you, for me, 40 years you've been doing this, 40 plus years. If you look back, does it feel like it was 40 years ago, or does it feel like it was yesterday for you?
Oh, no, it feels much closer than 40 years ago. I can tell you that because Berry Gordy, who is really the founder of Motown, is my best friend, and he's here with me in Washington, D.C. this weekend, you know, to celebrate my getting the Kennedy Center Award. And we were just talking last night. You know, it's been 50 years, man, and it went by overnight. So Barry and I have been together for 50 years. You know, I met him before we started Motown. And time flies when you're having fun.
You were a high school student when you started, actually, in
yes,
Detroit.
Yes, exactly.
And do you think it's harder now to be successful in music, to get into music, than it was when you started? Was it harder back then?
I think it's all relative. I don't think it's ever been easy to get into the music business. And I don't think it ever will because there are so many people who want that. There are so many people who are striving to have that and who are after it, and so many talented people in the world, and there always has been. So I think it's all relative. I think that according to whatever the times are, that's the same, you know, difficulty getting into the recording business is there.
Mm. If you weren't in music, what do you think you'd be doing?
You know, I really don't know. when I met Barry, I was just graduating from high school, actually, and I didn't think that my dream of being an entertainer and being a singer and being in show business was achievable because of where I grew up. You know, I grew up in the hood in Detroit, you know, and so I just didn't think that was achievable. And so I was really on my way to go to college to study engineering. And so I don't know. Maybe I would have been doing that.
Hmm. Were you from the Brewster Project? I know that Diana...
No. I wasn't from the Brewster Project. Neither was Diana Ross. I mean, Diana Ross grew up right down the street from me on Belmont Street on the north end of Detroit, about four doors down from me. She moved to the Brewster Projects eventually when she got to high school. They moved away and moved to the Brewster Projects. But no, I never lived in the Brewster Projects. I grew up on the north end of Detroit.
Hmm. Have you always had the falsetto voice, or is that something that you decided to go with at a point in your career?
Well, you know, I've always had a high voice. My voice is high, and basically, you know, people have always, you know, talked about the falsetto voice and stuff like that. I use falsetto in just parts of songs that I sing, but my voice is just naturally high. When I was in high school, even, you know, I was always in the glee club and the choir and things like that, and I always sang second soprano or alto or something like that. Very few songs that I even sing tenor on. So I've always had a high voice like this.
Do you have a favorite part of the business? Because you've done it all. Acting and touring and performing and writing for yourself, for others, and recording. Is there one thing that you enjoy more so than another part?
Well, you know, I think my favorite part of my work, my business, is performing. Because, I love every aspect of it. I love being in the studio. I love writing songs. I write songs all the time. And I love making music. But I think the reason that I still perform is because that's my favorite part. Because I get a chance then to one-on-one with the fans. I get a chance to be with them. I get a chance to react to them and have them react to what we're doing on stage. And I always say I never do a concert for people. I do a concert with people. I mean, we go and we have a fun time. It's a good time. And I can be feeling bad, but when that music starts, you know, it kind of perks something up in me, or the alter ego comes out or something, and it's always fun.
And why work so hard? I mean, you have accomplished so much. At this point, you could be just kicking back, but yet you tour, and you're still recording. You just put out a new album again, another new album.
Yeah. Well, I tried a retirement when I left the Miracles, you know, because I was vice president of Motown. And so I figured, hey, I'll just go to the office every day, just put on suit and tie, go to the office every day, take care of that, whatever I'm doing there, and be that. And I tried that for about 3 years or so and went stir crazy. You know, I found out that who I really am is what I'm doing now. I'm really a performer. I'm really a person who loves, although I would have written songs and recorded some other people and stuff, even if I had never come back to be a performer myself. But I found out that that's really what I love. So I doubt if I'll ever retire again like that. I will probably slow down my schedule. But my schedule has been really busy for the last 2 or 3 years because of the food company that I've started and I'm involved in, because when I'm not doing concerts or something or speaking somewhere, then I am doing stuff pertaining to the food company. So it's been really very hectic for the past couple of years, trying to squeeze all that into my life and then still have a family life. I just got married again 4 years ago, and so it's been hectic. But I just think that I will never retire from this again, because it's what I love and it's what I do, and that's why I still do it, because I do love it so much.
Well, happy anniversary to you and all of our worldwide listeners over the years. 20 years, in fact, you have been listening to this request program on The Voice of America, and it's been my pleasure to have been a part of this program for a part of that 20-year period. Today on the show, we brought Taylor Swift, Aretha Franklin, and Smokey Robinson to you, and we've got some more specials where we will highlight some of the biggest names from Border Crossing's history as we continue to celebrate our 20th anniversary. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Vince for producing our show today. We'll be back soon with more Border Crossings on the VOA1 Music Network.